The improvement of the 2022 Falcons is mostly owed to the improved offensive line, which is owed to the improved coaching. Jake Matthews was a huge catalyst to the improved running game. We'll be returning to McGarry Island to see if he'll be returning to the Falcons in 2023, as well as talking about what makes Chris Lindstrom one of the best guards in football.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, a.k.a. Mr. Drew, a.k.a. Sirius Black, and of course, the most humble host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, your team every day. And today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. Just pick 2 to 6 players, and if they score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 25 times your money on your entry. And first time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com. Promo code Locked On. Guys, we thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. Course is free and available Monday through Friday on a variety of podcast platforms, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, and of course on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube, and you will get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. And make sure you check us out on your Roku and Amazon Fire TV as part of Locked On Sports Atlanta. Just download the Locked On Sports Atlanta app, and you will get Locked On Falcons as well as other shows on your Roku and Amazon Fire TV. So guys, we are continuing our positional previews, wrapping up the offense with the offensive line. And, you know, we're going to talk about what changed for this team and the big improvements that they made, particularly up front. And let's rewind the clock, you know, to last year, where, you know, last summer, I should say. And, you know, I expressed my pessimism and quote unquote negativity about the Falcons entering 2022. And regular listeners of this podcast knew that that was firmly attached to my pessimism of the offensive line, right? Like a lot of, you know, I have the reputation of being negative just for the sake of negative, but I happen to believe that my negativity comes from something, right? It's just not, hey, I just walk around moping all day. But, you know, I'm sure maybe other people would disagree with that. But, you know, that negativity came from, that pessimism came from the idea that, okay, the Falcons had one of the worst offensive lines in football in 2021, and they're running it back with the same starting five, right? And my expectations were that, you know, they were going to be bottom five on both sides of the ball, both trenches. And that was just no way to be a competitive and better football team, especially against quality opponents. And, you know, we'll talk about the defensive line later, but, you know, the offensive line wound up not being anything close to bottom five, right? And you saw that, you know, showcased by the big improvement that they showed in the run game, right? They were literally a bottom three run attack in 2021, and they were a top three rushing attack in 2022. When you look at metrics like DVOA from Football Outsiders, they were 31st in rushing in 2021 and third in rushing in 2022. And to me, when I say, you know, the reason for this team's improved play in 2022 compared to 2021, even if it wasn't reflected in a record, but we all saw it watching the games, like this was a better football team, right? And to me, that was owed to the massive improvement from the running game. It became something that the Falcons became a strength rather than a weakness, right? And so, you know, and again, that fueled my pessimism last year. And again, you know, Mr. Drew, aka Negative Nancy. But like, again, there was a reason for that. And it was basically because I understood that this team could not function effectively without better play in the trenches, especially on offense. And again, that offensive improvement, that offensive line improvement, we credit Dwayne Ledford, the Falcons offensive line coach, for that. And it goes back to a conversation we had last summer when we were talking about the ways that the Falcons offensive line could improve, given that they were running it back with the same starting five that were just lacking a year before, that they were basically making a big bet that Dwayne Ledford can just coach them up. And I think the Falcons won that bet, right? And it's not to sit here and be like Dwayne Ledford waved this magic wand and gets all the credit. At the end of the day, the individual players went out, did their job, executed their assignments, and so they deserve the credit. But for me, when I look at what is good coaching versus what is not, when I see one player stand out, you know, I can sort of look at that and see one player improving. I can say, well, that player may just have, you know, that special ingredient, right? The ability to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, so to speak, and become a better football player. But when I see multiple people at the same position group, especially, stand out, that to me tells me that it's not just, hey, we have, you know, in the case of the offensive line, five special players, right? It's more likely that they have a system, they have a structure around them that pulls everybody up, not just one individual player. And we can look at a lot of the evidence to suggest of why Dwayne Ledford did a great job. We can look again at the individual improvement of several players. We'll talk about some specific ones later in the episode. But you can also look at, hey, they had a revolving door at left guard in the second half of the season, right? Injuries to Wilkinson and Hennessy and Chuma Adoga and Kobe Gossett. And so, you know, for the last, you know, 8-9 games of the season, they were just churning out different guys at that left guard position. And yet it did not have a negative impact on the offensive line. Usually continuity is a problem for offensive line. It wasn't really an issue for the Falcons, at least when it came to their strength. The other thing that we saw that was proof of good coaching on this team was the progression that the offensive line showed from week one to week 18. That it was part of the evolution of this offense in the second half of the season that they had to get better in pass protection. Like, again, we're talking mostly about their ability to improve as a run team, but they did get better over the course of the season in pass protection. They gave up less pressure this past year than they did the previous year, and they gave up less pressure at the end of the season than they did at the beginning of the season, right? And we saw this team evolve from, you know, masking their offensive line issues early in the season with a ton of play action. They still called a ton of play action, but, you know, there was less match protect, right? They were much more willing, especially in the final four games with Desmond Ridder was a starter, to get into a more traditional straight drop back passing game. And, you know, again, when we're talking about this offensive line improvement, we're really stressing the run game's improvement. Because for most of this season, certainly the first half of the season, the Falcons called a passing game like, you know, Arthur Smith basically called plays like he knew the Falcons had a terrible offensive line, right? That for a large chunk of the season, I don't think that assessment, if that was Arthur Smith's, you know, sort of belief, was wrong, because I don't think the Falcons offensive line was very good in pass protection in the first half of the season. But by years in, I won't sit here and tell you that, oh, their pass protection was great, but it was far from a liability like it seemed to be throughout most of 2021 and certainly the beginning of 2022. And again, more evidence of Dwayne Ledford's impact on this team goes back to a conversation we had in the summer, where the definition of insanity was doing the same thing over and expecting different results. And that conversation really applied to the Falcons. Even, you know, we went into training camp with Jalen Mayfield and Matt Hennessy as the starter incumbents at left guard and center. And we came out of training camp with Elijah Wilkinson winning that left guard position and Drew Dahlman winning that center position. But even though we had made those changes, it did feel like we were basically doing the same thing over again. That when you looked, you know, if you want to simplify again, you know, Mayfield was a right tackle that was playing left guard for the first time. Wilkinson was primarily a right tackle that was playing left guard for the first time, right? Hennessy, when he came into 2022 as the Falcons starter, or 2021, I'm sorry, as the Falcons starter, he was this second year undersized center with very little experience. Dahlman, coming into this past year, second year undersized center with very little experience. And yet again, the idea is, oh, well, how's it going to be better? They're different players, but are you going to get a different result? And we did get a different result. And again, I think that's owed to Dwayne Ledford's coaching, right? That, you know, we talked about in the summer, we needed to see at least improve. We weren't expecting good play from the left guard position, whether it was Mayfield, whether it was Wilkinson, but we were hoping to see, like, can we just get like James Carpenter levels of badness, right? Which is bad, but like not like awful, right? You know, compared to what we saw from Mayfield in 2021. And I think we got that. I think, in fact, Wilkinson was better than James Carpenter was at that left guard position. You talk about Dahlman versus Hennessy, and I was lukewarm on Hennessy coming out of the 2021 season and was like, yeah, he's fine. And I'm kind of in the similar boat with Dalman coming out of 2022. Yeah, he's fine. But I do feel like 15%, let's say, just to put a number on it, pulling that number out of my butt, like 15% better about Dalman going into 2023 than I did about Hennessy going into 2022. And part of that is owed to just having a more favorable opinion of Dalman as an individual player due to, I think he's a lot more physical at the point of attack due to the fact that I think he was a lot better second level blocker this past year than Hennessy was the previous year. Right. And so and another reason is because of the confidence I have in Dwayne Ledford that I feel like, okay, you know, I think Dwayne Ledford can solve these issues, right? That I feel a lot better about what jump Dalman can make going into year three under Dwayne Ledford than I probably felt, certainly than I felt going into year three for Matt Hennessy a year ago. So I think, you know, things are looking up for the Falcons. You know, hopefully we'll see those guys continue to progress under Ledford's coaching. But we'll continue today's episode talking about the guys that we did see progress in 2022, which were Chris Lindstrom, Jake Matthews, and Caleb McGarry. We'll talk about Chris Lindstrom's all-pro season. We'll talk about Jake Matthews being the biggest catalyst behind the Falcons' improved running game. And we'll talk about Caleb McGarry's improvement and whether or not that's going to lead to him being re-signed and us continuing to vacation for a few more years on Caleb McGarry Island. But guys, before we get there, I do want to thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. And for your second listen, why not check out the Locked On NFL podcast to get the daily conversations on the biggest stories in the NFL each and every day. Check out Friday's episode for the NFL key predictions and also Monday for the game to game where you get the scoop on the weekend's action from the local insiders. Subscribe to Locked On NFL, available on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Guys, the NFL playoffs are here and we are excited to announce a new sports betting partner for the Locked On Network, which is the number one sports book in America. That is FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, like Locked On is new, that's even better because they have so many great features that make betting on sports fun. And new customers, if you join today and get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet, just go sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel has your favorite bets for money line and player props and point spreads. Plus, you can combine bets for a bigger payout with the same game parlay. And if you want to take that action, get that first $5 bet and make a parlay for this weekend's game, you got the Eagles favored by 2.5 points over the 49ers. You have the Bengals favored by 1 point over the Chiefs. That line has gone back and forth over the last couple of days and could continue to go back and forth. So head on over to FanDuel. You can check out the app where it's safe, it's secure, it's super easy to use. Don't miss out by placing your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. So, guys, let's talk a little bit about Chris Lindstrom. And I don't have as much to say about Chris Lindstrom as I do Jake Matthews and Caleb McGarry. We all know he's good, right? We all recognize he's one of the best guards in the NFL, earning all pros, earning Pro Bowls, you know, PFF's highest graded guard, highest graded offensive lineman. You know, he's basically doing what at least I thought he would be when we evaluated him after that 2019 draft. I was like, he has the potential to be one of the better guards in the NFL. And he has absolutely been living up to that over his first 4 years. And probably is going to be due a significant contract this offseason. And whatever the Falcons decide to pay him, it's like, whatever, don't care. They want to pay him $18 million, $20 million, $15 million, whatever, you know, he's worth it, right? And I think the reason why Chris Lindstrom is worth it and what really stood out to me on film watching him this year was just how good his second-level blocking was this year. And that is so necessary, in my opinion, for you to have a high level, to have high value in this specific type of scheme that the Falcons run, which is that outside zone scheme, which is, you know, having those guys being able to be those heat seeking missiles on the second level, taking out linebackers and creating those alleys and creases that allow, you know, a 4 yard run to, you know, turn into an 8 yard run or a 12 yard run. And that's the thing that really, you know, decimates defenses when you can run the ball, not just, you know, we live in an era where it's not 3 yards in the cloud of dust like it used to be 20 plus years ago. It's like, can you run? Can you gash teams for 8 yards, 12 yards, 10 yards, all that stuff and more is the thing that really devastates teams from a run standing point. So let's talk about the Falcons' second best offensive lineman in Jake Matthews. We kind of touched upon Jake Matthews a little bit yesterday when we were, or the other day when we were talking tight ends with Parker Hesse. right? And we talked about how Parker Hesse was arguably the biggest X factor for the Falcons' improved running game. And that was kind of a film-based argument, given, you know, how important it is to have tight ends on the outside in this outside zone scheme, sealing those edges so that you can run sort of the stretch play, which is the bread and butter of the scheme. But I mentioned on that episode that if you were just looking at the stats, right, the stats would tell you that Jake Matthews is the biggest catalyst for Falcons' improved running game, right? And you can look at that by Football Outsiders adjusted line yards metric. And for those of you not familiar with that, what that is, the simplest explanation I can say is it's basically trying to divide responsibility of, you know, rushing success between the offensive line and running back. And basically it's saying that, you know, the offensive line is primarily responsible for the first 4 yards that a running back gains, and anything after that point, 5 yards or more, is up to the individual running back, right? And so the Falcons as a unit went from 20th in adjusted line yards in 2021, according to Football Outsiders, to 5th in 2022. But when you break it down by the direction that they run it, and they categorize it as left end, left tackle, up the middle, right tackle, and right end, you saw improvement across the board in all four out of those five directions, right tackle being the one exception, right? And the second biggest improvement came in runs up the middle in terms of adjusted line yards, where they were 0.55 more yard, averaging more yards per carry on runs up the middle, which again, I think is a testament to the improved play of Wilkinson and Dahlman over their predecessors at that left guard and center position. But by far the biggest improvement came when the Falcons ran left tackle in terms of adjusted line yards, where they were 1.78 yards more better than they were the previous year. Right. And the Falcons were dead last in adjusted line yards running behind the left tackle in 2021 with 2.9 yards per carry. And then they were up to 4.6 in 2022. And then if you look at success rate, right, in directional running by success rate, right, the three biggest areas where the Falcons showed the biggest jump from rushing success last year in terms of which direction they ran to this year were the left end, the left tackle, and the left guard, right? Their success rate at left end jumped 24 points from 39 to 63%. Left tackle jumped 20 from 36% to 56%. And left guard jumped 13 from 41 to 54%. And when we talk about run direction, we're not talking, you know, like that individual. If we run left tackle, that means Jake Matthews is solely responsible for the Falcons' rushing success when they run there, right? The whole unit has to execute regardless of which direction they run. But that in, if they're running at left tackle, that's usually mean the running back's running it through that, you know, B gap between the left tackle and the left guard, or the C gap between the left tackle and the tight end. And so therefore that individual player is going to be at the point of attack. And so you need that guy to execute his blocks. And so when we talk about Jake Matthews, 2021 guys, he was a terrible run blocker. We talked about this last year when we were breaking up. He was a terrible run blocker, but we gave him a pass because he's so good as a pass protector that it's like, look, what are you going to do, right? We had so many issues in pass protection last year that it was like, look, he's a terrible run blocker, but he makes up for it in pass protection. And, you know, beggars can't be choosers, as I often say, right? But Jake Matthews was legitimately good as a run blocker this year. He's never going to get credit for it, right? We are a pro Jake Matthews podcast here on Locked On Falcons, and he never gets enough credit from a vocal contingent of this fan base. But he's not only an excellent pass protector, but he's also, you know, an improved run blocker. And that to me is, again, another testament to Dwayne Ledford, that essentially you taught an old dog new tricks, where a 30-year-old Jake Matthews, who had basically been an underwhelming at best run blocker for basically 4+ years, right? Ever since like 2016, 2017 were probably the last years where you could legitimately say, hey, Jake Matthews is an impactful in a positive way run blocker. The fact that he was able to basically after 4 years of underwhelmingness, you know, improve this year, again, I think is another testament to Dwayne Ledford's coaching. So let's move on to the other tackle position, and let's talk about Caleb McGarry. And let's mean we're taking a trip to McGarry Island, right? And let's talk about the origin of McGarry Island, right? It was, you know, because the reality, guys, is despite being this quote unquote pro Caleb McGarry guy, I was always kind of lukewarm on Caleb McGarry, but I did feel like in his first 3 years in the NFL, he was far too vilified by our fan base than he necessarily deserved. And especially last year, where, you know, the arguments and debates came down to like, what was the bigger liability, left guard or right tackle? And anybody who listened to this podcast know that I thought the answer was clearly left guard. Like, it wasn't even really a conversation. It wasn't even a debate. And that's kind of where the origins of Caleb McGarry started, because it was like, I'll plant my flag on this deserted barren island that is Caleb McGarry. And right. And he's like basically the lesser of two evils, right? That, you know, and the main reason for that, the quickest and dirtiest version I can explain that to, is that when you have a tackle like Caleb McGarry that struggles against speed, you can potentially, it's much easier for you to mask that issue by, you know, essentially lining up a tight end next to him. And that can slow down the speed rush a lot better. But if you have a left guard like we had in Jalen Mayfield, who struggles against speed, struggles against power, struggles against everything, like, there's nothing you can do schematically to help that guy out like you can with a right tackle. So again, it was a situation where, to me, Caleb McGarry was the lesser of two evils comparatively. But, you know, it wasn't a great place to vacation, right? That was kind of the point. It was like, there are worse places to vacation than McGarry Island, but, you know, this place is not bad. It's like a 2-star resort, right? You know, it's not awful. Now, I would certainly say that it improved as a 3-star resort. And we'll probably talk a little bit more in depth when we get to February, when we get to March, you know, when we approaching free agency, and talk about the pros and cons of keeping Caleb McGarry. And we can go a little bit more in depth in his strengths, his weaknesses, areas, all that stuff, right? But as we approach free agency, you know, we're looking at his price tag and whether or not he's going to be re-signed. And right now, despite, you know, being the pro Caleb McGarry guy, you know, I'm reluctant to pay him. Right. I'll be honest with you guys. Like, when I look at the price, I'm like, you know, it's going to probably cost the Falcons like $12 to $16 million a year to keep him. And for me, when I look at how I value Caleb McGarry, like, if it was like $8 to $10 million, like, I would have little issue paying that type of money. And to me, it's kind of a similar conversation we've had the last two off seasons with guys like Foye Oluokun and Austin Hooper when they hit free agency, where, you know, it was like, look, they're valuable players, but only at a certain price tag, right? There's a certain price where it's just not worth your while, right? And I think it's a similar situation with Caleb McGarry. And frankly, you know, on an individual basis, I feel much better about Foye Oluokun and Austin Hooper than I do about Caleb McGarry. So I feel like we're kind of marooned on this island, and it's not really by choice. And it feels like, you know, with free agency approaching and this offseason approaching, you know, you have an opportunity to, you know, you see a ship on the horizon and you can be rescued, and you can either choose to light the signal fire and get rescued and get off the island, or you can be like, you know what, I've grown accustomed here and we'll catch the next one. And that's going to be the choice that the Falcons are presented with. Now, for the record, my expectation on what choice they will make, I fully expect the Falcons to try and keep him. And I would bet that they will successfully keep him, assuming that they make a competitive offer for him. Because in large part, if they were willing to run it back with last year's starting five, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't try to do the same with this year's starting five. That was much, much better. Right. But part of you wonders, did they run it back with last year because they didn't really have better options, right? In part due to the limited funds, they couldn't go out there and upgrade that position, right? And now that they have more options because they have increased funds, will they make that move? Now, we'll have to see on that. But, you know, this year's free agent class along the offensive line isn't great. And this year's draft class, I think, has a lot of talent. But so far, I don't know if there's a guy that I would feel good about taking with the first round pick at 8. But there are plenty of guys that I would feel pretty good about taking with the second round pick at like 44. So we'll see how that all plays out with the Falcons in terms of, if they don't get Caleb McGarry, are there alternative options? But that will be a topic that we can certainly explore as we get closer to free agency and as we learn more about this draft class and potentially the upcoming free agents. So we'll sort of leave that aside. We'll talk a little bit more about other areas where the Falcons may address their offensive line this offseason and potential changes, and why I don't think we'll see a spending spree in free agency, but we could see the team looking to that draft to supplement this offensive line. I want to tell you guys about Prize Picks, a fun new way to play daily fantasy. And now Prize Picks is offering 2 to 6 players. It used to be 2 to 5, but now it's up to 6 players. And if they score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win not just 10 times your money, but up to 25 times your money on any entry, guys, and it takes less than 60 seconds to enter. And the great thing about Prize Picks is not you versus other people. It's just you versus projections, and you can find projections on anything that you want to watch, like the NFL, the NBA, NHL, PGA, college sports, WNBA, NASCAR, tennis, MMA, boxing, and so much more. Prize Picks is safe, it's fast, it's easy. It's currently in operation in over 30 states in the US and Canada. Just download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up so that you can play this fun new way of playing daily fantasy sports. And first time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That means if you deposit 100 bucks, Prize Picks will give you 100 bucks. If you deposit 50, Prize Picks will give you 50. Don't forget to use that promo code Locked On at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. So guys, we're wrapping up today's episode, and we know Caleb McGarry is an impending free agent. Other impending free agents are Elijah Wilkinson, Kobe Gossett, Chuma Adoga, and Jermaine Ifedi. Now, we've already talked about Caleb McGarry and his potential return. As a similar note, I do think Wilkinson will probably come back. It won't cost much money, in my opinion, to keep him back. Like, I expect a bump in pay from the veteran minimum that they paid him this past year due to, you know, solid performance. So something in maybe the $3-5 million a year range, which is, you know, decent for a mid-level starting offensive guard or a high-level backup guard, which is what Wilkinson may wind up being. You know, of those five guys that are impending free agents, the one I would say I would be surprised if they returned was Jermaine Ifedi. I just don't think he did anything this year that merits the team bringing him back. I do think Chuma Adoga did plenty to merit him coming back, primarily only playing exclusively at left guard against the Bears, but I do expect him to sort of be the incumbent swing tackle, which is what he was brought in to be at the beginning of the season. And then Kobe Gossett, I would imagine would return on a veteran minimum deal. I don't see any harm in bringing him back at that price just to bolster the competition in the back end of the roster. He wasn't great when he got on the field. There are certainly limitations there, but, you know, we can make an argument that he's better than some of their other backup options that they might have at that left guard position. So, again, my expectation for next year, again, assuming that they are going to bring back all five starters, is that four out of those five starters will probably be settled. Left tackle, center, right guard, right tackle, right? There may be some nominal competitions, especially at the center position, but I fully expect those four guys in Matthews, Dahlman, Lindstrom, and again, McGarry, assuming he's resigned, will basically head into the summer as, I won't say uncontested, but very likely to remain uncontested starters heading into week one. To me, if we're going to have a real competition next summer, especially amongst the incumbents, it's going to come at that left guard position if they resign Wilkinson. And I think they would probably have a battle between him and Matt Hennessy to be the primary starters. And the winner of that competition would be the starter heading into week one. Now, I do think because of that, that's the one position that if the Falcons are going to go out in free agency and spend money to try to get an upgrade, that's the one position where I think it's the likeliest that they'll do, right? But again, similar to the tackle situation, the free agent class isn't great. You have like a 35-year-old Roger Saffold who's been clearly on the decline the last couple of years. You have Dalton Reisner, who's been a serviceable to solid starter for the Denver Broncos the last 4 years. You have Nate Davis, who's been very good for the Titans the last couple of years, but at right guard. And I've been asked by certain people, like, do you think Nate Davis could move to left guard? And sure, technically it's possible, especially if you're, you know, buying stock on Dwayne Ledford and his, you know, immaculate coaching abilities. But essentially, Nate Davis has never played on the left side of the offensive line. Going back to his college, he was exclusively a right guard and right tackle. He's been exclusively a right guard in Tennessee. So that would be a challenge for him to basically switch to another side of the offensive line. But he's probably the best guard, at least, you know, in terms of a Falcons fit, available in free agency, but he is a right guard where the Falcons are obviously already have Chris Lindstrom. Now, as we get closer to March, we might go deeper into the available free agents at a lot of these positions. But, you know, and by then we'll have a better grasp of, you know, who's going to hit the market. We'll potentially see some guys that maybe cap cuts, players on the trade block, all that and more will come to light as we get closer to free agents. So we will punt that, you know, breaking down the free agent class at a later date. So if we assume all five starters are returning, along with Hennessy, along with Adoga, I feel like you have 7 out of the 8 guys that you're going to have active on game day already on your roster. And if Adoga is the swing tackle, the loser of the Hennessy Wilkinson battle is one of your 2 backup interior guys, right? And then for that last interior backup spot to be active on game day, you just basically have a competition between Jalen Mayfield, Kobe Gossett, if he's resigned, Ryan Neuzel, Justin Schaefer, right? And because you already have like 4 potential options there, and the winner of that competition presumably will be at least serviceable as a reserve, I don't expect the Falcons to add another interior offensive line this offseason, right? And again, if they do, it'll almost certainly be a starter, and that will relegate both Hennessy and Wilkinson to being backups, as opposed to drafting a guy or signing a guy to compete. Maybe I'm surprised by that, but I don't expect the Falcons to invest significantly on their interior offensive line this offseason, because I feel like with Dolman, with Mayfield, Schaefer, as well as having, you know, holdovers from Hennessy, as well as getting Wilkinson, like they feel like they've invested enough in there to be able to get through at least another year, hoping that those guys will continue to show improvement under Dwayne Ledford and his coaching staff. Now, when we talk about additions this offseason, I do expect the Falcons to add a tackle regardless of what happens with Caleb McGarry. Obviously, if Caleb McGarry walks, that makes tackle a much bigger priority, right? But assuming that Jermaine Ifedi walks in free agency, your only real competition for Adoga at swing tackle is Tyler Vrabel, who was on the practice squad this year. And so I feel like the Falcons are certainly going to be looking to add more competition there. And theoretically, if you draft a guy, you can groom that guy as a future starter, whether that's at left tackle, whether it's at right tackle, because we've talked before about Jake Matthews's contract basically assures that he's going to be in Atlanta through the 2024 season. And assuming that Caleb McGarry signs a decent market level deal, that's probably going to guarantee the first 2 years of his contract, which will keep him through the 2024 season. And so whatever tackle that you draft this year will presumably get 2 years of development as a swing tackle. And then, you know, under Dwayne Ledford's tutelage, hoping that where that guy will be in year 3, that guy could be ready as early as 2025 to replace one or both of McGarry or Matthews. If one of, or both of those guys regress, all right, you have a ready-made replacement for one of those guys ready to go already on your roster. And so, you know, the last point we'll talk about today is, it's not getting enough attention, or it's not getting as much attention as other areas of the roster, other needs like on the defensive side of the ball. But there is certainly a reality where the Falcons use their first round pick this year on the offensive line, and most likely on a tackle, because that's the premium position on the offensive line. And again, it's similar to me of the prelude to the 2020 draft, where this time, you know, late January, February, we were all obsessing about getting a pass rusher, getting Kalaivon Chason, getting AJ Epenesa. And I remember people complaining like, oh, this mock had the Falcons taking a corner in the first round. We don't need a corner because we have Desmond Trufant and Isaiah Oliver. And I know that's a laughable statement, today in 2023, but that was a legit take in 2020. And then we got to March and the Falcons went out and spent big money on Dante Fowler and then cut Desmond Trufant, and all of a sudden cornerback leapfrogged edge rusher as the Falcons' biggest need. And so there's a situation, guys, where like Caleb McGarry walks in free agency and all of a sudden, you know, we're talking about edge rushers, we're talking about cornerbacks, all of a sudden offensive tackle is going to be the biggest need for the Falcons heading into the draft. And we could see, you know, the Falcons pulling the trigger on offensive tackle at the top of the draft. And so, you know, that's part of my long, you know, agenda of basically you got to take mock drafts at this point in time in the calendar with a grain of salt, but you know, you guys do you. So we'll see how that develops. We'll see sort of where my opinion on this offensive tackle class is by the time we get to April. We'll see where the consensus opinion, I'm sure it'll probably be different than mine by the time we get to April. So, you know, I think if they don't keep Caleb McGarry, then offensive tackle is going to shoot up the knees. So we may be talking a lot more about this offensive tackle position in March, in April, than we are currently right now. But again, I think it's most likely that the Falcons will try to run it back with the same starting 5 through the power of competition and through the power of Dwayne Ledford's coaching, believe that this offensive line can pick up where they left off, not only as a run blocking team, but also as a pass protecting team, and be legitimately one of the better offensive lines in football. And we won't, you know, be as worried about the evolution of the offense next year, because they will already be evolved, I guess. I'm thinking about Pokemon or whatever, but you know what, you get what I'm saying. So they'll start off where they ended up and be a legitimately quality offensive line. And if they can continue to show improvement from the beginning of next year to the end of next year, you know, who knows where this offensive line could be. So that will be something to keep an eye on, guys, but that will do it for us on our offensive line review of 2022. And obviously we'll be talking more Senior Bowl. We'll take a little bit of a mini break before we get into the defensive reviews, which we'll do in the week leading up to the Pro Bowl, I think, or the Super Bowl or whatever. I don't know. whatever that is. But next week we'll do Senior Bowl stuff. Tomorrow we should be having Jarvis Davis of ATL Day Ones on the podcast. We'll talk his thoughts on, you know, the defensive coordinator search. Probably talk a little bit about his expectations for the Senior Bowl, since Jarvis and I will both be down there, you know, heading into that week. So we'll give you that scoop on tomorrow's episode, guys. But I really appreciate you tuning in and making Locked On Falcons your first listen. By all means, continue to do so. And for your second listen, check out Locked On NFL, Locked On Sports Atlanta, ATL Day Ones, Locked On Hawks, Locked On Braves, Locked On Bulldogs, all part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.